Ever complain about your body? Were your children listening? Kids and body image. Let's talk about it with Justin and Lindsay Holcomb on Steve Brown, etc.
He's an old white guy, an author, broadcaster, and seminary professor who's sick of religion. And he's brought friends. Please welcome Steve Brown, etc.
We are so glad you're here, and we hope you can spend the hour with us. You're going to learn some stuff that you don't know, maybe about yourself, certainly about your children. I'm Steve, the aforementioned old white guy, and as I said, you always have a place at our table. Matthew Porter is our executive producer. Matthew's Zach makes sermons. Kathy makes baked goods. What do you make?
Well, I don't want to brag. I make excuses pretty well. I've gotten to be kind of an artisan at making excuses. So,
but our role producer, do you make anything else?
No, well, I was going to make this joke better. So there's an example of some of my craft.
Jinx is our producer, and he's working hard in his little glass booth. Jinx agrees with the vegetarians that red meat is bad for you. Is that true, Jinx?
Well, I mean, on its own it is, but once you cook it, it should be better. However, they do say vegetarians are healthier than carnivores. So that's why I eat cows. They're vegetarians.
I'm glad to hear that. Yep. I've got a whole family going in that direction, and I'm running as fast as I can in the other direction. Our video director, John Myers, is in his tech bunker. John, thanks you for helping us reach 5,000 subscribers on our Key Life YouTube channel. And George Bingham is the president of Key Life. George, does that mean that you get President's Day off?
Well, I hope so. Or at least I get, you know, honored by everybody out there, you know.
Yeah,
contributions would be good, too.
And since you're the boss, you can do whatever you want. If you don't want to come in, you just don't come in. And
George, George, we honor you every day.
Every day, yeah. George.
You know, by the time we air this, aren't we going to be past President's Day?
Yeah.
So I will have missed it. I will have missed my day off.
You've already missed your day off, and it's not even here yet.
And Kathy Wyatt is the soft, feminine side of the program. Kathy's so good at baking, I have to wonder, did you choose the Lutheran denomination, or were you recruited?
No, I chose it.
Do they know about your prowess at baking?
I don't know, but you know those little cups that you have for communion? They have wine in them. So that's why I went there.
It's the small things in life.
You like the wine, right?
I do, yeah.
I don't know if that's the best of reasons, but listen, they're worse, I guess, reasons than that.
We'll find out.
By the way, Lindsay Holcomb is the communication coordinator for Samaritan Village. She also contributes articles to Key Life and co-authored the book, Rid of My Disgrace, Hope and Healing for Victims of Sexual Assault. And if you've been there and you've done that, you ought to get that book. It's an important and life-changing and profound book. It's called Rid of My Disgrace, Hope and Healing for Victims of Sexual Assault. And Justin Holcomb is an Episcopal priest, obviously. He wears that tight collar around, which keeps him from cussing and spitting in public places. And he teaches theology and apologetics at Reformed Theological Seminary and Gordon Conwell Theological Seminary. He's written or edited some 20 books. Whenever he burps, they publish it. And he's got a bunch more in the hopper. The Holcombs have two daughters, 10 and 12 and have written several books together, including the newest one we're going to talk about today, God Made Me in His Image, Helping Children Appreciate Their Bodies. I've just finished a chapter in a book I'm working on that centers on the image of God, His laughter and His lament. And as I did more and more research on that particular biblical doctrine, the more I saw how profound it really is. But frankly, I haven't thought about that in the context of where you're writing this book. So before we get into the book, let's talk about the theme of body image. And then I want to find out something about what that has to do with God's image. So whoever goes first. If you don't talk, this is not going to work.
I was just waiting to see if Lindsay would just say, go ahead, because I always talk. And so I'm going to go for it. There's a little bit of a problem with children and body image. Culturally, I think many adults are aware that body image for men and for women is a significant issue. People want to be taller, thinner, different color hair, different type. I mean, just no one seems to be happy with what they've got going on with their body. And children are picking up on that. And there's some scary statistics about this. And so just to kind of set the tone for why this is important, when we're talking to the publishers and they're saying, you know, you already did one book on child sexual abuse prevention. Why are you picking another dark topic like body image for children? Like, let's do something happy. Like, you're going to go to heaven one day and blah, blah, blah. And the reason we picked this topic is because we have children and our children have friends, and we're picking up on this theme of kind of distorted body image or bad body image. And so when you do the research, some of the statistics are this: 5-year-old girls who see their mother dieting are twice as likely to start dieting at a very early age. 5-year-old girls don't need to be dieting. And if a 5-year-old hears their mom talking about, ooh, I don't look good in my bathing suit, and they start grabbing parts of their body and like there's something wrong with them, kids pick up on that. By age 6, girls especially start to express concerns about their weight and shape. Half of American children between first and third grade are worried about their weight. And 80% of 10-year-old girls have dieted at least once. Like, our girls are 10 and 12. The idea that most of their friends have started dieting because they picked up somewhere from an older sibling, from their father, from their mother, from their culture, from their friends, that they're restricting their food and already displeased with what they see in the mirror. That's a heartbreaking reality, because I grew up thinking I was amazing. I thought I was handsome and brilliant because, you know, all of that kind of stuff. I probably had parents who were a tad bit too supportive in that sense and built up my ego or something. But the idea that there's a bunch of little kids who don't have the emotional capacity to deal with something like, I don't like my body, is kind of heartbreaking. And so there's other stats, but I'll stop there. And one more is that at the age of 10, one third of girls and 22% of boys say that how they look is their number one worry. One third of 10-year-old girls and 22% of 10-year-old boys say that how they look is their number one worry. There should be other worries in life than how they look. And so that's why we picked up this theme. That's why I ride Lindsay's coattails on this kind of stuff. And so this is something that was important to her, and she told me why, and I'm a nerd, so I researched it, and we wrote a book about it, a kid's book. So this isn't a book for parents. Like, here's some advice. Maybe don't talk about your body in front of the kids. Like, it's not a parenting book. It's actually a children's book for like 3 to 8-year-olds. And the goal is to communicate the good news of the doctrine of creation in a way that children will enjoy and might actually impact them. But Lindsay, is there, what else are you thinking? Because I don't want to talk the whole time.
Justin is correct that we wrote this book, you know, having two girls, and we saw friends and neighbors literally talking about their bodies where they, when the kids, our kids and their kids were around, maybe thinking, oh, they don't hear us, they're only 4, 5, or 6. But kids listen. They are so astute and perceptive of what's being said, even if it doesn't look like they are listening. And just realizing parents need tools, because just a one-off comment or kind of a little remark about maybe their body or their size or a certain diet can have huge ramifications for a child. And so if we're thinking through, okay, God created male and female in his image, he created the world to be, you know, peaceful and full of shalom. How can we help redeem that as his children, as his followers of Christ? And so part of that was with this book, Let's Create Tools for Parents.
Guys, you don't want to go anywhere. I'm going here, and I've never been here before, and I've probably never given a thought about these issues. Well, I thought theologically there is the docetic Gnosticism that said all flesh was bad. And so when I was docetic, I looked in the mirror and thought, you're evil. Stokely Carmichael said, I want to create a culture where a little black girl can look in the mirror and say, I'm black and I'm beautiful. I want to look in the mirror and say, I'm ugly. But it's okay.
Hi, this is Eric, producer of Steve Brown, Etc. If you've been listening very long, you know I'm a struggling believer, and I'd love to share some things that have helped. At Key Life, we believe that the deepest message of the ministry of Jesus and the Bible is the radical grace of God for sinners and sufferers. And we have 4 mini books that'll help you believe that no matter what you've done or what you're going through, God's not mad at you. Feeling Guilty, Suffering, and Faith and Doubt by Steve Brown will help you apply healing biblical truth to where it hurts the most. And my mini book, The Gift of Addiction, How God Redeems Our Pain, shows that coming to the end of ourselves is actually the beginning of faith. These 4 mini books are in the Grace for Sinners and Sufferers mini book combo, and it's available at keylife.org for a suggested donation of $12. They're also individually available for a suggested donation of $4.
Hey, you're listening to Steve Brown, Etc., and we're talking to Lindsay and Justin Holcomb about the great new book they've written for kids and parents. And you need to get this. You know, especially you got kids or grandkids, and it's for them, but it's for you too, to maybe take you places you haven't gone before and to think thoughts you haven't thought. The book is God Made Me in His Image, Helping Children Appreciate Their Bodies.
Lindsay, could you talk a little bit about like the emotional and spiritual effects on people when they get this whole body image thing wrong. That's real general, I realize, but can you just kind of start down that road a little bit?
Sure. I think, definitely when you think of a distorted body image, distorted self-image, you're going to see shame definitely mixed in there. And the goal of our book, God Made Me in His Image, was to encourage parents who maybe are wrestling with some of this stuff too, but giving them tools to help walk their children through appreciating their bodies, addressing the questions and the shame that's kind of wrapped around in there, and kind of drawing out just the links between who God made you to be and how you're made in His image and what does that mean. And so that's the foundation. And then when questions come up or when they're feeling down or they're wondering their worth as God's image bearers, the parents would have the tools to be able to kind of help foster a healthy body image of you are strong, you are beautiful. Going back to the Bible and looking at when God made male and female, he called it very good. And every part that God made of you is very good and very strong, and trying to steer the child in a different direction as they're hearing all these other voices from social media and from their peers of you're not good enough or strong enough or tall enough or short enough or whatever it may be. They've got so many voices in their head nowadays, especially. I look at our sixth grader who has friends who are on TikTok, and oh my goodness, it's disheartening how children are behaving, 10, 11, 12 year olds on TikTok. And they're on these apps where it'll ask strangers to rate them based on their looks. And I don't even know the name of these just because we've completely banned them from our house. We're like, we're not even engaging with this. But they are just bombarded with all of these voices telling them you're not, society basically says you're not good enough. And so what can parents do on the flip side of coming alongside them and saying, you know, food is a good thing. How we use food is the question. Are we using it as punishment? Are we using it as escape? There's no such thing as a bad food. I think we have to get rid of that language as parents because we often have those categories. Just get rid of that. Put away bad food. Food is not a bad thing, even full of its chemicals and GMOs and all that. But there are foods that are really, really good and appropriate for your body and necessary. And then there's sometimes foods. So the sometimes foods might be the snacks and the candy and the red dyes, but the anytime foods are going to be those proteins and things full of calcium. Justin, I saw you wanted to jump in real quick.
Well, I was going to jump in and say, what kind of categories do you use? Because I'm just going around minding my own business as like a 40-year-old dad with little girls. And like I'd said something like, don't eat that. That's bad food. And Lindsay's like, that's not the way we do this. And so she had to teach me on this, like, because it's all the little, I mean, the big things matter, but it's the little things that also matter. And so, you know, how she was teaching me how to talk about food around our whole family was really important. So now my girls don't think like, oh, that's bad food. And this is the good food. And then they become restrictive and they start lining up food. Like, I'm trying not to set up my kids to have an eating disorder, basically. Like, that's the goal, is not to suffer in that way. And so there's other like small little tools. When we started hanging out with moms and other families, it's usually the moms. I'm not trying to be a sexist here or misogynist or chauvinistic, but every once in a while I'll hear a dad do some self body shaming, but I'd say at least half of the moms in front of me have talked about their bodies in a negative way, which is just gross anyway. Like I'm like, you're like a 40-year-old lady. Like, I don't need you commenting on your body in front of me. Like, stop it. No one else does this in my life. But they do it in front of other kids, like their own kids and my kids. I mean, frequently Lindsay and I have to be like, all right, girls, you heard how that lady was talking about her hips, her thighs, her nose, whatever. Yeah, that's crazy talk. Like, we don't do that. But it was Lindsay alerted me to all of this kind of stuff. So that's what my hand was up for, just to go back to the sometimes food, anytime food. And it's cool because the girls kind of pick up on that, which is really helpful because it feels like she has instilled in them, and I've just reinforced what she's instilled, a way to think about how they relate to food and how they relate to themselves.
Hmm. And where do we stand on buffalo wings? Is this a sometimes food or an often food?
That's what I was going to ask.
Isn't that one of the food groups?
Sounds like an anytime food.
Yeah. I mean, I like
that's
everything I'm
Florida
hearing.
Florida National meal.
Or you say,
are the categories, hon? Is it anytime food and sometimes food? Or are there two categories?
That's what I learned in preschool. When the girls were in preschool, it was just those two. And so I think as a parent, you might, you know, want to shift certain things over to the sometimes category. But really the basic gist of the story is have open conversations about food in the sense of not making it a big deal. But like, you know, we've got these great, you know, vegetables and fruits, they're going to make our body strong. We want to make sure we load up with those first. And then, of course, let us enjoy some dessert, a sometimes snack. But I think I've seen parents go in one direction where it's like, those are bad and you never have it. And then you see those kids going crazy when they go over to someone's house. And then you see never having the conversation. Growing up for me, there was just no conversation about food. Granted, I was not inundated with social media, but I still fell really heavy into an eating disorder of anorexia. But the problem was, is nobody ever talked about it. Even when my mom could visibly see me just wasting away, there was never a conversation. And I have a great relationship with my mom then and now. She's a nurse practitioner. So there was, she had the tools, you know, or at least kind of the education to be able to talk about health and wellness, but there just was not a conversation at all of what's going on, what's driving this, how can I help you? And so I think as parents, don't talk about your own junk to your kids, about your issues. Like, do not put that on the kids. You don't need to talk to your children about intermittent fasting or paleo or keto or none of that crap. Leave that for a whole different conversation with your girlfriends and just build up the children of you are strong, you are beautiful. And if they're struggling, let's find an activity where you can excel and use your body. Let's put you into tennis. Let's try out swimming. Let's go to art class. Like, find those creative avenues to steer them to discover how did God make me unique?
Well, we're
just gonna... to be really clear, chicken wings are an anytime food.
Great. Write that down.
And they don't make you fat. Yeah. But they make you lose your hair. So I'm going to stay away from them. The book is God Made Me in His Image, Helping Children Appreciate Their Bodies. These are issues that we don't talk about very much. Maybe that's one of the reasons for the eating disorder epidemic in America. We'll find out. Don't go away. On the other side of the break.
From Key Life comes two mini books, What Do You Do for a Living? And Life After Retirement. What Do You Do for a Living by Justin Holcomb addresses the problem of defining ourselves by what we do and how we perform in our work instead of by who we know. A gracious, loving God who defines who we are. Life After Retirement by Steve Brown examines how those transitioning from work to retirement often experience a loss of purpose in life, and how the quest for personal significance can best be answered by God's radical grace, love, and purpose for our lives sufficient to carry us through this transition. What Do You Do for a Living and Life After Retirement can help guide people struggling with either work or retirement. These two Key Life mini books are available through keylife.org for a donation of $6.
Hey, you're listening to Steve Brown, etc., and we're glad you are. And if you use the YouVersion Bible Study app, make sure you check out our new Key Life devotional. It's called When Being Good Isn't Good Enough. You can find that by searching for me, and I'm not hard to find, the old bald guy, and you'll find that particular devotional.
Excellent. So, Team Holcomb, you know, we spent the last two segments talking about body image and how wrong body image leads to potentially eating disorders and other kind of wrong or unhealthy situations for parents and for kids. So I know that all of that fueled this book. And so you could have very easily written a book to parents about this issue or some kind of instructional thing where you're teaching the kids, but you guys took a story-based approach with some beautiful visuals, a delightful story. Talk a little bit about some of the specifics of what this book is and the approach that you chose.
Sure. God Made Me in Him in His Image, Helping Children Appreciate Their Bodies, is set with a school classroom. I don't even think we really say what grade it is, which is kind of helpful because the book is gauged or aimed for age 2 to 10. So really a child could read it and might think, oh, this is kind of my class. So in the book, a class of students are going with their teacher, Mrs. Chen, on a field trip to a zoo, kind of sanctuary of animals who have been hurt, who are recovering, kind of needing additional care to heal. And so they're going to take this trip through the park, looking for the big five, so to speak. And we got that idea after taking the girls to Kenya, gosh, a couple years ago, of just looking for the big five when we were out on a safari. And the big five are the leopard, the rhino, the elephant, the lion, and the buffalo. And so we weaved some education through the book while also having the students and the teacher point out, along with the kind of the zoo safari guide, the different animals and maybe how they're uniquely made, either in their imagery or in their design. For example, one of the giraffes has, and I'm not sure if I'm going to say it correctly, but leucism, which is similar to albinism, but it's this giraffe that's completely white. And so there's her skin cells don't produce any color, and it's a little bit different than an animal that is albino. But so we kind of weave in some education, but we're pinpointing different animals and maybe how they are made just different and unique, or how they've been injured and now that is affecting their life, but also having a lot of positive kind of ramifications. And so the students were able to see these animals, and you see this dialogue happening in their heads, as maybe they see an animal and they think, gosh, that animal is similar to me. And I feel really self-conscious about my freckles as they see the leopard with spots, or I feel really self-conscious about my size or my nose when they look at, I think it might be the rhino. And so as they're kind of processing this and hearing some of the education from their teacher and the guide, it all kind of just comes back to the picture or to the message of God made you, God made his creatures and these animals in his image, and it was really, really good. And it was not a mistake. It was not an oops, like I forgot about you, sorry to miss out on your kid or animal. And so the kids are really at the end of the book encouraged or convicted, inspired, and it's just kind of helping the parents, give them a foundation that they can take this and then launch from there, of having conversations about how do you feel about your body? And your body is really strong, even if you feel like at times, you know, you're struggling with your height on the basketball team. Justin, what do you think? You want to jump in on that description?
That was it. That was kind of Lindsay's idea. Because what we're trying to do is harness like a kid's love for animals. Like, they're in all the kids' books. Kids like animals. They're different. They're unique. And so we're taking all the things of these animals, like the elephant's big ears, the leopard's spots, the rhino's horn, and the rhino is also missing a leg because it got trapped in a little thing. So that way we're dealing a little bit with some type of physical impairment issues. And so dealing with a girl with frizzy hair, with freckles, with a birthmark, and different issues. So we're not going to, we're showing basically kind of the thought life of a kid who is internally thinking about his freckles or her frizzy hair or something like that as they're processing. Wait a second, God made these elephants with big ears, but the big ears are useful. So something that they would normally think elephants would make fun of each other for, their big ears, becomes like a cool thing. So it kind of flips, helps them kind of see what they could see as a weakness is actually something as God's design, and kind of getting to that big idea of God's design and how it's actually good. That was the whole point. We make a big point, you know, when he made other animals, when he made animals or things, it was good. Day one, day two, day three, day four, good. When he got to humans, it was very good, or good, good in the Hebrew. And really taking that whole point, when God made you, it was good, good, very good, and running with it and helping kids apply that at their level to themselves in an appropriate, age-appropriate way.
Oh, man. The book is God Made Me in His Image, helping children appreciate their bodies. So this directly helps children, and it directly helps those of you who are parents to think through and to understand these issues. And I find it personally helpful because all of my life I've worried about frizzy hair, and I'm working that through. And on this program, if you were smart, you would charge me for the therapy that you're giving. Hey, guys, this is hard work. We're going to take a nap, but like Jesus, we're coming back.
Hey.
He was irritated when the electricity went out. No television, no music, no Netflix. Then he discovered that the battery on his smartphone was dead. He decided to make some coffee, but when he went to the kitchen, he realized that without electricity, he couldn't even do that. Then he noticed his wife in the kitchen, and he sat down and talked to her. He said later, "You know, she seemed like a very nice lady." I know, technology's good, but sometimes go talk to somebody face to face. You might be surprised how nice and real they are. It's messy sometimes, but Jesus would like it. I'm Steve Brown. You think about that. Share what you just heard with a friend. Go to youthinkaboutthat.com. Hey, you're listening to Steve Brown, etc., and thanks for spending this time with us. That's a compliment, and we appreciate it and you. Next time you're shopping on Amazon, you can help Key Life at the same time at no extra cost to you. If you buy a lot of stuff, you could help a lot of people, and you could help me pay my mortgage. And if you love Jesus, you would. So go to keylife.org/AmazonSmile, and you can learn how.
As the title reflects, kind of foundational in the book is the idea, the theological point that we're made in God's image. And that certainly becomes an important jumping off point or a foundational point. But it doesn't just apply in this situation. I mean, it's can be helpful to review that with kids for a number of other reasons, and even us as adults for a number of reasons. Can you talk a little more about, the idea of being created in God's image as it relates here?
Absolutely. That's the foundation. That's the title, as you pointed out. It comes from Genesis 1. God, let us make man and woman in our image. Man and woman, God created them. And so made in God's image is a wonderful title of dignity and worth. And going back to the, day one, everything was good. Humans were very good when God made them. And image of God, it comes from the idea of, I believe Moses wrote Genesis, and Moses knew that other kings had set up images of themselves when they had a kingdom. Like, here's an image of me because I'm the king, and here's the image. And whatever you did to that image was like doing it to the king. And so the image and the king were very closely related, the image of the king and the king. And so Moses, inspired by God, takes that image and says, God made you in his image. And so we're a representation. We're in God's likeness. So there's amazing worth and dignity built into that we are images of God. So there's dignity, worth, and value. But we're also only images. We're images of God. So there's some humility built into that at the same exact time in a good way. And so it has inherent humility and inherent dignity as the image bearers of God. And I think 100% right. This applies to sexism. Man and woman are in the image of God. It applies to racism. It applies to socioeconomic issues, that it flattens out all the different ways that we as sinful humans find a way to stratify people. And it just flattens out our little hierarchies and says, no, you're all images of God, but you're only images of God. And so it humbles us, but also undergirds us. And I think the dignity is what more people need. Because if we actually knew our dignity as images of God, we wouldn't try to make up our own dignity on our own significance. So I think it has deep ramifications. But it comes down to really practical things too. So, we kind of ended the book with a note to parents on some, how do we apply the image of God stuff practically? And so I kind of thought for the next few, throw out some ideas of how this might play out practically and then see if there's anything you all want to pick up on. So One of them is, because we're images of God, we don't encourage children to actually compare themselves to their peers. It's not a matter of, oh, she's taller, bigger, she's better or lower than me. So when that starts happening, parents can step in and say, well, we don't need to compare looks, size, height, other things with your peers. Now, that's honestly, just to be really honest, that's difficult for me, because my children are 10 and 12 and they are stereotypically beautiful children. And I tell them, and so I rein that in. I don't highlight that they're beautiful. I also remind them, as dad, you're smart, you're strong, you're funny, you're sweet. And that was helpful for me to realize, because if I tell my 10 and 12 year old girls, the main thing about you is you're beautiful, I'm setting them up to only see themselves as, you know, a body image. And they got to maintain that, because the compliments keep coming when I look a certain way. So do you have anything on your side, hon?
Right. I think Justin nailed it. We've got to teach the kids, give them that language. And then when our children are feeling jealous over their peers', you know, body or looks, how can we help them navigate that? How can we help them pray through that and repent through that and ask for God to increase kind of kindness and also just not having that kind of constant threat of comparison. So I think it's giving them the tools, walking them through that. But they do watch our language. They mirror us. I will hear kids that say things and I'm like, oh, that totally is your parents' point of view, because they're just reflecting what they've heard at home, whether it's about politics or just an opinion about something. So what we say, they listen to, and they will pick up that language. And so imagine how amazing it will be if we have a ton of parents that are just echoing this constant theme of, you know, you are made in God's image. It is very good. You are strong. You are beautiful. You are smart. And then if they're not feeling that way, let's make a list of things you want to try, learn, tackle. So we can kind of have a bucket list, and just for the sake of having it. But you also might discover things that you really like, that your body is really adept to. Maybe you're really a fast runner, or maybe you're really strong, or you're really smart with chess, or whatever it may be. But just kind of getting them out of a rut sometimes of, you've always tried this, let's try new things, I think is just good across the board, whether your child struggles with anxiety or just kind of low self-esteem, comparison, and that kind of constant jealousy can just help them shift a little bit, and just helping them to see that their bodies can be used for really great and strong things. Also with service, getting them involved with getting out there and caring for other people is always a huge one. But I always, I don't always say this just because it can be an awkward conversation, but with parents, if there's an opportunity, and they're talking about their own insecurities, that's fine. Have that conversation with an adult, get a counselor, somebody who really can help you walk through that, but do not have that conversation with your children home. Your kids need to see you feeling really strong about yourself, trying new things, enjoying life with your kids, sitting down for a meal. They need to see that. They don't need to hear you talking about your own flaws and insecurities. At the same time, you don't want to be fake and like everything's fine, but they don't need to see you processing your own emotional baggage. And so I think deal with that, go for it. Find somebody that can help you who's an adult. And when it comes to bullying, I would say for parents, just because we've had to walk through this, be an advocate for your kids. Believe them, get involved, go to the school people or wherever it's happening, and make sure that your child knows, like, you listen and you've got their back and you're taking it seriously. Because I think so often it can get brushed under the rug, or just like you're making a big deal out of this. But it's a real thing. And a lot of our kids are coming home wrestling with, I've heard all these things about myself and it's repeated and it's ongoing. I need help. So step in.
Hey. Got to undermine the lies. Undermine the lies that Satan and sin tells them.
All right. Listen, you guys keep writing these books with such wisdom. They're really helpful stuff. We'll keep having you on this program to talk about it. Thanks for spending this time with us. It's gone fast, and it's been good, and I hope we can do it again. Guys, we're going to come back and tell you who we're going to do it unto next week, so don't go away.
Hi, this is Eric, producer of Steve Brown, Etc. If you've been listening very long, you know I'm a struggling believer, and I'd love to share some things that have helped. At Key Life, we believe that the deepest message of the ministry of Jesus and the Bible is the radical grace of God for sinners and sufferers. And we have four mini-books that'll help you believe that no matter what you've done or what you're going through, God's not mad at you. Feeling Guilty, Suffering, and Faith and Doubt by Steve Brown will help you apply healing biblical truth to where it hurts the most. And my mini-book, The Gift of Addiction, How God Redeems Our Pain, shows that coming to the end of ourselves is actually the beginning of faith. These four mini-books are in the Grace for Sinners and Sufferers mini-book combo, and it's available at keylife.org for a suggested donation of $12. They're also individually available for a suggested donation of $4.
Hey, a great time talking with our friends. They write books that are very helpful. This one, God Made Me in His Image, is a great book. You ought to have it in your home, and you ought to make it a very important pedagogical element of raising children. I feel maybe it's because I'm a cynical old preacher, but I just feel like you ought to say something. You're not going to be able to do all of this. You know, we live in a world that's real, where they're real bullies, and sometimes a punch in the face is what's necessary, where there are television commercials and social media, and where you really want to see things. You know, you can tell your kids they're smart and wonderful and beautiful and bright, and they can do anything, and they'll believe you until they get in the real world and they hit a wall. So Justin and Lindsay are not talking about 100%. They're very practical people. And this book is very practical. But don't, you know, perfection is the enemy of the good. And so there's some good and helpful things here that'll make a difference with your kids. And go to the principal if your kids are being bullied, but show them how to fight too. And I'm using that as a metaphor of a lot of things. I haven't thought about these issues before, and that's probably obvious, but it needed to be said. And it's some really good stuff to keep in mind, that we're made in God's image, and that makes us very valuable. Or to make it existential, I'm valuable, and I expect you to treat me that way from now on. Hey, Kathy, who's going to be on next week?
Well, we're on a roll here with double guests. Next week, we have two ladies, Eve Annunziato and Jackie Brewster, and they've written a book. Steve, you're going to love this one. Hearing God Speak. It's a 52-week interactive Enneagram devotional.
Oh, yeah. Ooh, I don't even know what that is.
Well,
I mean, I've got people on this staff that urge me to pursue that.
Zach.
And yeah. I don't want Zach and Eric and every and a bunch of others.
Well,
I
next week is your
I
week.
Need to know about me.
Yeah, next week is your
week.
Don't
know anymore, and it's too late to change. But it's going to be a good program, even if I can't pronounce or spell the subject. It's our hope that you'll join us next week, same time, same place. Between now and then, don't do anything we wouldn't. And that gives you a wide, wide berth.